Greetings, dear, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Working Experience, a very warm, open-arm audio embrace and a squeeze. This episode is brought to you by my company, One Circle Media. One Circle Media is a hybrid digital agency and media content creator. We create and design apps, websites, videos, social media content, and physical products. We are artists, directors, designers, producers, coders, editors, thinkers, makers, and creators who embrace story and creativity from design, web and app development, animation, docs, features, TV shows, digital and social media content to physical products. For our clients, we create content that builds networks and audiences across multiple platforms. Check out our work at onecircledigital.com and onecirclebrand.com. If you work for a network, studio, brand, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I'd love to hear from you. This episode is also brought to you by an app that I created called Still Believe. Still Believe transforms a picture in your home into video proof of your child's favorite magical characters. With the app, parents can catch the magic of the Tooth Fairy, leaving money under their children's pillow, or Santa delivering presents on Christmas Eve in their home. You download the app, take a picture, and we create the magic. We utilize feature film visual effects artists to transform your picture into video. Just tell your kids that you have a special app that can detect and capture the Tooth Fairy, then present them with the video proof in the morning. The look on their faces is priceless. Your Still Believe video is created in minutes, and you can then save it to your phone and share it on social media. The app is available for the iPhone and Android, and it's free to download. Our aim is to bring joy and wonder into the hearts of children around the world. Check it out at stillbelieve.co. Thanks, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning. Snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks. We're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Dan, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
To stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
He was rubbing his
Sexual
toenails at
harassment.
His desk. I can't take it anymore.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Working Experience Podcast. It's Maddie K.
And John, welcome everyone. Corona. Still in our lives.
You remember the movie Office Space?
Oh, I remember it well. About fond memories.
Yeah, it got quite a cult following. Mike Judge did it. He's in the movie too. I think he's the he's Jennifer Aniston's boss at the restaurant. He's very
funny.
Yeah,
he's great. He's awesome.
And everybody quotes lines from it, like, "Yay, Peter, what's happening? I'm going to need you to go ahead and come on in on Saturday." So we're talking about the end of Office Space, or at least the radical reformation of what the office is going to look like. Is there going to be an office? I mean, the problem is, if you lose the office, you have the show, The Office. What's going to happen to that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, nobody really knows what's going to happen to The Office. Our office is going to be redesigned to respect, you know, this social distancing of 6 feet. Our conference room's going to have less chairs. Are we going to ditch the open office layout and go back to cubicles and spread out work? Are more people going to work from home? And if an office needs more space, you know, that could increase demand for office space, because what a company could get away with for their 1,000-person company, maybe they need double or triple that space. But I think that, you know, it might have a net zero effect. And then, you know, what's going to happen to co-working spaces? Like, you know, I'm a WeWork member. Like, they were already in trouble to begin with before COVID-19. Now they're really swimming upstream. People are canceling their leases. But there's going to be, you know, there could be a demand in short-term leases, flexible lease space. And how is that going to impact WeWork? So all of this stuff is going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, you know, the reason I brought up Office Space and the show The Office, I mean, how many shows and movies draw on work, particularly offices where you have like kind of mid-level people and whatnot? Like, how much material is drawn from that milieu that has so radically shifted?
Truckloads.
Any show, like, you'll see, like, you know, where they work. Like on Seinfeld, you saw where Elaine Benes worked. And a lot of the jokes surrounded her work, stuff that went on in her office, like George to a lesser extent. And obviously you have the shows The Office. But, you know, all those shows, there's always like a work element, or it takes place like in their place of work. I mean, like, just to...
Sorry to cut you off, but I don't think work's going to go away.
No,
I think there's still going to be
but the office,
content.
Though. Like the office.
Yeah, but that office might, you know, you could then make jokes about people standing 6 feet away or how the office is configured.
Oh, I know. But I'm just saying, like, it affects a lot of, like, Saturday Night Live has been doing, I mean, they're a totally different workspace. They're not an office, but they've been doing their show via Zoom, I guess. Like, they've been shooting skits remote,
and it's pretty. Have you seen it?
I know. I've heard it's kind of grim. It's not that.
It's pretty brutal.
Well,
it's,
trying to listen to. You ever listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? It's
no
NPR news quiz on Saturday mornings, and they always have a celebrity guest on, and they have called, Peter Sagal does it. I love it. I listen to it every Saturday while I'm making breakfast. They're now just shooting remotely. There's no live audience. I can't listen to it. It is unlistenable because there is no audience reaction. It's just dead. It's dead in the water.
Yeah, it's like I would watch Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. You know that HBO show?
Yeah.
And that is very difficult to watch without a live audience.
I know.
And he's just kind of like he's kind of in a studio, I guess, just by himself, but there's zero reaction. It's just... it's very, very difficult. But
make about The Office is, and we'll get into more of the nitty-gritty numbers, but, and Steve Jobs talked about this, that energy that you get, I'm not a big chakra energy person, but that spontaneous give and take that like a comedian gets with a live audience or a show or a play, you know, it's just, it's lost and it just falls flat. So... you know, that's an issue.
I think there's ways to, you know, to keep that, because you could, for instance, have, you know, the good thing that could come out of this is the 9-to-5 or 9-to-6 schlep might be a thing of the past. And you have teams that come together at set times on set dates and then go off and do their work, which might be an optimal way to work. So you could have people come in on certain times to the office and use the office, and then other people come in at certain times. So you still keep the integrity of that team aspect and that energy. But then when you need that alone time to create or do your job, you have that. So, I mean, it could be the best of both worlds.
It certainly could. I mean, I've heard a lot of people complain that so much of the workday is taken up with BS. And then you have commuting time, you know, getting to work at an hour. I mean, for me, my commute's about 40 minutes, 35, 40 minutes, which is not onerous. It's a pretty easy drive. But still, you know, I have to leave here at 6 in the morning, usually to feel comfortable getting in there. Now I don't have to. Of course, I teach. This is a much different, you know, paradigm. But... I guess it's not all that different. But just to throw some numbers out there, you know, people have been talking about telecommuting for a long time, but according to this MIT report, up until before the pandemic, only about 4% of the U.S. workforce actually worked from home at least half the time. Like, that's
nothing. A pretty low number.
To me, I mean, for as much as people talked about it, that is a very low number. Now it's 34% of Americans who previously commuted to work report that they're working from home by the first week of April due to the coronavirus. That's still, I mean, 34%. I would have to say now it's up around 90 because, I mean, you know.
Well, I think it also depends on...
Depends on what you do.
You know, in the United States, what state you're in, what you do, also what part of the country you're in.
Right.
You know, if you're... If you're in New York State right now, and this might be the same as for Massachusetts, if you can work from home, you are working from home.
Yes. Or you're not working is the other aspect.
I mean,
that's 34% of people who are actually working. I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, who worked at restaurants, who worked wherever, fill in the blank, and they have nothing to do. So.
Right. Like the bartenders and the waitresses and the women just.
Yeah.
I was just talking with Jeannie yesterday. You know, we're, you know, all the barber shops and the hairdressers, everything's closed. So we're thinking about having the hairdresser that cuts the boys and Jeannie's hair come to the house and just do everyone, you know, cut everyone's hair.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure people would be willing to do just about anything to, you know, get some money coming in. But, you know, as far as like the office goes again. So then the question is, okay, you have all these people out now. How many of them are going to go back? Like, how many of them and when? How many of them are going to feel comfortable? Well, there's a few different aspects. One, people might decide, geez, I really like working from home. This is great. Bosses, managers, owners might say, why am I paying for all this office space? Like, how much is a... Like, if you want to rent an office in Manhattan, how long a lease do you have to sign?
So are you talking about, like, a non-co-working, like,
you have a company, Park Bench Media.
Minimum of 5, maybe 10 years.
5 years. Now, how many people are looking at this and saying, my God, look at our overhead on rent alone? Why are we doing that?
Oh, in Manhattan, you're talking, you know, if you, so you have a 50-person company and you need, I don't even know, 10,000 square feet. God, you're looking at, you know, $50,000 to $70,000 a month in rent.
And you have to commit for 5 years.
Yeah, maybe even over 100,000. Depends on where it is in Manhattan.
Well, and the thing is, people are like, a five-year lease. I mean, what if this happens again? What if this comes back? You know, I sign a five-year lease. 2 years later, we have another virus, another pandemic. I mean, who's to say this is the only one? This is one.
Who's to say not only is this the only one, but that this is the only wave?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's talk about a second and third wave and how this is going to impact, you know, the fall and winter of 2020 into 2021.
Yeah, yeah. So what this article is saying is that they're trying to project what's going to happen. So they say it's likely that many Americans who are now working from home for the first time will continue to do so after the pandemic. I mean, I work in schools. There is no social distancing possibility in schools. I mean, unless they tripled or quadrupled the size of the place, and I'm in a classroom with 10 kids who are all 6 feet apart, it's I don't know how that works. So, and, you know, the younger the kids get, you know, I used to teach, like, middle school, and I was sick for, the first year. I just felt really run down because of all the germs. So people are very, you know, paranoid about that. And people going into offices.
I mean, I don't know how – sorry to cut you off, but I don't know how you implement this in a – classroom setting.
I don't either. That's why Mayor Marty Walsh, he's the mayor of Boston, was even skeptical. So Massachusetts is done for the year. I believe New York City's done for the year too, right? Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. They're done from a spring sports perspective. They're done. That season is gone. But well, not they haven't called schools. New York City might have.
Well, I know Bill de Blasio did, and then Andrew Cuomo said he didn't have the authority to do that. It was kind of a classic power struggle
there. Yeah, I don't think it's officially called.
Well, we are. New Hampshire officially called it. Washington, D.C., I think, officially called it. So California, I believe, did. And they're even skeptical about September. Like,
then you even have, like Sweden, that everyone's back at schools. Everyone's at the gym. They're practicing social distancing, and their numbers are quite low. And then you also have places like Australia and New Zealand who not only flattened the curve, they decimated the curve. There's like almost no cases there.
Well, see, I thought Sweden or one of the countries was in a lot of trouble because they didn't do anything to begin with. And they've been experiencing they didn't have any kind of social distancing. They just thought, we'll just ride it out. And they've been having problems. I don't know.
Sweden's been having problems with their older population. Like okay. Their elderly and the nursing care facilities have taken a major, major hit.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
But I think that's the bitter pill you swallow.
Yes.
Are you comfortable with that? That, it's gonna, if you do nothing about it and, you're going to take a hit. But their numbers are higher than like their neighbors of Denmark and Norway who are really doing social distancing, but they're lower than the rest of Europe. So it's not like they're Italy level or like Spain level.
Well, this article is basically saying like, look, it's not if this is going to change office culture and work culture, is that it is going to change it and to what extent. If nothing else, it's gotten people reconsidering very much what the office would look like and what they're willing to on two different levels. One, are they going to have office spaces anymore? Or two, if they do, what are they going to look like? So I guess I would say, and this was a question I wrote down, like what jobs really require people to be in an office? Or office, I'm saying workplace. I mean, hospitals obviously need nurses, doctors, technicians on site. I don't see how that works remotely. The movie industry, you need people on set. They got to work the equipment. You can't do that remotely. Restaurants, barbershops. I mean, those
construction sites. See, that's what you do is like once you take this to its inevitable end is like, what is life going to look like? Can you go to the movie theaters? Would you go to a restaurant? Would you go to a stadium? You see what I'm saying? Like it is everything that we take for granted on like how is commuting into a city going to look? Like my commute's an hour and 20 minutes. When I get on the Long Island Railroad, I'm like cheek to cheek. I mean, there's no way you can social distance and have everyone commute in. It's impossible. And the place is a petri dish.
It is. But, we've...
Subway systems.
Society evolves. I just finished this book about Robert Moses building all those highways. That radically changed the face of New York City and the surrounding areas, Long Island, and all of that. Highways just in general. Automobiles. You go back to the automobile. I mean, that created a radical shift in how people saw space, used space. Some better, some worse, people would say. So we've made adjustments. I mean, obviously human beings adjust, we evolve. And I think, people who can kind of step back and just say, look, this is a period of evolution. It's something that happens. And human beings, they do evolve, but evolution takes a long time. And oftentimes it takes a catalyst to really push people, force them to say, okay, we keep talking about teleworking. Now we have to do it because we've been doing a crappy job of it before. People were quote unquote teleworking, which meant they were probably checking their emails a couple of times a day when they're at home. Now you have to produce. So how's that going to look? So employees need to make the adjustment. and employers. They need to, well, this is another thing I was going to get to. The effect on office supplies, like overhead includes like computer monitors, desks, pens, pencils, paper, mice, keyboards, stocking the kitchen, you know, anything, the conference room table.
Donuts.
Yeah. What's going to happen to all that? Like, is Staples, the store, going to stay in business? Because maybe...
Well, I think that'll shift to the home office. And then the question is, will companies reimburse employees for the desks, for the chairs, for the staplers? I mean, people are still going to work. It's just how the, you know, how the supply chains are going to supply, you know, the materials. I mean, we see it right now with food, right? When you're, you know, a farmer, I just read an article, you know, a farmer will have, let's say he's growing vegetables. Half of it will go to retail, supermarkets, and then the other half will go to restaurants. Well, now the other half is gone. It's just non-existent. So they're literally letting crops deteriorate in fields because they have the supply chains have broken down.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, is Staples going to be like, we're not getting any orders anymore? I mean, for an office, like, you know, let's say a huge office, AT&T in Manhattan, they require God.
Yeah, but
how
they're
much.
Buying like wholesale staple.
Oh, I know.
It's a different supply chain. So the Staples or the Office Max really cater to the home office small business crowd.
All right. Well, then whoever is supplying these people.
Yes, a big supplier could take a hit that.
Well,
because
let's
you
face
know, supplies
it.
Office desks for IBM or KPMG or someone.
Well, and those corporations have huge amounts of money. So they probably waste tens of thousands of dollars on stuff they don't need just because they don't
oh,
care.
Oh, easy. Easy.
But the average person isn't going to do that. I mean, I'll go out and, I mean, I have a laptop already. I have two laptops already. I buy some paper and pens sometimes, and I have a printer, and I don't need anything else. I think I have a stapler around somewhere, but when was the last time I used that? And, you know, people are digitizing all their files. I mean, how much? I have a little filing cabinet because I am, like, esoteric when it comes to technology. Most people don't even need a filing cabinet. They have hard drives and thumb drives, and I think that office... you know, the office supply chain is going to be terribly disruptive. Or, I mean, I think potentially it could be very disruptive, or they might adapt. I mean, maybe that's just a dinosaur anyway that needs to die, where it's like, look, we don't need this office space anymore. I don't need these conference tables or chairs. I don't need these fluorescent lights. I don't need any of this stuff. I need an office for 4 hours a week. That's all I need. And,
right.
You know,
and maybe, you know, and also maybe you don't need it for your entire workforce, or maybe office space will evolve into these meeting spaces or these congregating shared spaces where you rent it by the hour or the day or the week.
Yeah.
Where, you know, basically a mobile workforce that can come in, get the work done, and then, you know, go off. And again, this all depends on the industry. If you work at a steel mill, this is not going to work. You got to go to the mill and, you know, manufacture the steel. If you're making cars, you need a plant. But if we were talking about an information worker, you know, in 2020, the majority of their work can be done anywhere.
Well, and you also think robots will become, I mean, people are already using them, you know, when you talk about steel plants.
Oh, I think they'll be more accepting of,
oh, absolutely.
Of robots.
Yeah.
I mean, there are going to be some good things that come out of this.
Well, I mean, it depends on your perspective, like being replaced by a robot, you know. I mean, again, it might be that a factory is like, geez, I don't need all these people. I need like 25% of them, and the rest I can just buy robots for $5,000 a piece, or I can lease them, and there you go.
Yeah, that be, and then that, I mean, we've had this discussion before, you know, then you start talking about a universal basic income, how people are going to be affected if their jobs are automated, and, you know, what does that look like, you know, as a society? Because, like,
well, I think right now, sorry to cut you off, but I think something like this, where companies have been dabbling, like, you know, say getting robots, like some have been dabbling here or there. Now it's like, well, damn, I'm going all in, because what else am I going to do? You know?
Right. Yeah, no, it's probably fostering demand, because, you know, as you brought up before, we're going to evolve, and we're going to figure out a way to make this work. It's just, you know, what is that going to look like, and how are people going to survive and earn a living, you know, in this new...
Or you could be me, and you just go face down on the couch, and that's it. Yep. I surrender.
Yeah, you go face down on the couch, and you've surrendered. You've given up so much, you can't even move your head to the side to breathe.
No.
So you suffocate to death in the couch cushion.
Face down. You know, I'm looking out my window right now, and there's a team of about 10 guys re-roofing my neighbor's house. So that industry is still there. And, huh. You know, they're probably making a decent, hourly wage. I mean, that's tough work. But you can't replace that with a robot or technology or, you know, people are going to...
Not yet.
Not yet. Have to get... But, you know, the other thing I was wondering about, like, what about, you know... the deli that's down at the end of the block that everybody went to lunch to every day, you know, what's going to happen to the bar where people would go get drinks and snacks?
Yeah, I think they're going to be decimated.
Yeah.
If they've already not been.
Oh, I think, yeah. You know, that's the thing. Like, let's say you're in Lower Manhattan and you have, you know, a diner, which was a lunch place. A lot of people went there from the Wall Street area, whatever. Now, you can't open anyway right now, or you could maybe do takeout, but there's no one there to get takeout. Like, I have a friend who lives on 13th and 7th in Manhattan, and he and his girlfriend order like once a week. He said he had ordered food from this really good restaurant near them. And they were willing, actually, they're not very near them. They're up on like 34th Street, and they came all the way down there because I guess there's just not that many people around in Manhattan right now to actually order food. So,
well, I mean, they're all terrified too that they could, you know, the food could be contaminated. I mean, it's for restaurants and bars and delis, like you mentioned, it's devastating, especially if they're in a city where the rents are sky high. Like Manhattan, you're paying a very high premium in rent that 2 months of no business could sink the ship.
Well, and not only now, but long term. Like, we're talking about people not going back to their traditional office situation. Let's say everything reopens and it's like, okay, everybody can go back to work, all the restaurants are open, all restrictions are off, but, you know, half that workforce isn't coming into the office anymore. They're working from home. So they're not going to those buildings.
And also, too, it's going to be a gradual. I mean, it's going to be gradual. Like, if tomorrow they said exactly that, everyone goes back to work, right? And even if everyone went back to work, how many people are going to pound into restaurants right away? People are going to wait and see, like, how, you know, is it okay? Is it safe? And then the next wave that hits, all that demand is going to suck back in.
Yeah. Well, and again, my original point, let's take all that out of the equation. Let's just say the coronavirus is done. Everything's fine. Nobody's worried. You still have a lot of that workforce who's not even back in that neighborhood. They're not coming in from New Jersey anymore. They're working at home because their corporation said, hey,
right. So that breakfast and lunch business goes out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've just lost their audience, which is not going to come back. You know, I guess that's the point of this article is, like, we understand what's going on during the coronavirus. What's going to happen afterwards? Like, let's say June 1st, they said all systems go. Virus is done. Everybody's good. It's not like we're going to go back to the way it was before March 12th. You know, it's just, it's different now. And you also have to wonder about the psychological effect that all this has on people. I mean, even taking the coronavirus out of the equation, if, you know, again, say in July, everything's good, but, you know, the corporation calls a meeting and says, look, we're having all these people, you're all going to work from home. We are giving up our lease. We're not going to have a physical space anymore. You know, it is weird. I mean, we have a friend who works for a telecommunications company in Manhattan. We were having dinner with him, this maybe 2 years ago, and he works primarily from home. And he said he went into the office one time, and it was a ghost town. Nobody there. And he said he like kind of missed like going out for drinks with people, seeing people, chatting with people, you know, like, what'd you do this weekend? So just like the kind of psychological shift of like not leaving your home that much, not leaving your immediate surroundings that much, it's so different, you know?
Yeah, no, it's definitely it's a culture shock.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
but you know,
I was going to say, for someone who lives like outside of Atlanta, which has a notoriously terrible commuting situation, like 2 hours each way, I'm sure for a lot of those people, it's like, thank God, because I don't have to deal with that anymore. But again, you can start to feel kind of isolated, I guess, you know?
You know, and then there's, I wanted to switch topics, but it's kind of related, is colleges and universities and what this means for them. I mean, they've essentially shut down, and now there's talk about what's going to happen in the fall. Are they going to reopen? Are they going to continue with the distance learning or the online learning? And what does that mean for freshmen? What does that mean for students that you know, live in New York but go to USC out on the West Coast? Like, are they going to go all the way out there and then have to come home? And then how does that look, you know, in terms of, you know, traveling arrangements? And then on top of that, is everyone okay with paying $70,000 to learn online?
Yeah. You know, again, being in a classroom with other students and a teacher, you know, I have real objections to colleges who, like, I mean, I've heard these, where you go into a classroom, it's like 300 kids, and there's a video monitor. I mean, that is, to me, absurd, considering the amount of money people pay for that. And you just, it's hard to replicate being around other people. I mean, a whole thing with college, for me, it's sort of like junior high for being an adult. Like, you're kind of on your own, but you're kind of not.
But you're not really, yeah. You're kind of in, like, a protective cocoon.
Right. But you still have to, like, I mean, I knew of people who flunked out of college our freshman year. And it wasn't because they weren't intelligent. They just didn't go to class, and they were just immature.
Well, the freedom was overwhelming
for
them.
Yes, right. So it's a good tester. Like, you got to do your own laundry. You got to get yourself to class. You got to, and even if you're living at home, you're, you know, with other people who are more, you know, it's more academically rigorous. You're there by choice, and you can have discussions with other people. And I know they talk about Zoom and all of that. I mean, it's tough doing anything on Zoom, to me. Have you been in like a multiple person Zoom?
Yeah, meeting? No, it's difficult. It's very difficult.
Yeah. Like, the connections are not that great. Like, even the Zoom meetings, and I like them a lot, that I do with three friends in New York. It's, and that's just four of us on there. It's kind of hard. Like, people talk over each other. You can't really, like, it's hard to
get there's a delay, so you think you can start your next thought, but
right, yeah,
someone else, Ted, is chiming in.
Exactly.
Or making a stupid joke.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what a conference of like 50 people must look like. Oh my goodness, like, that would be so. I mean,
the most I've ever been on was 12, and it was unproductive.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, they've talked to us about, like, doing classes via Zoom, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to try a Google Meets thing today. I've never used it, but I'll just be on my phone. I'm not going to be on video. So that's my sort of little toe in the water with that. But, yeah, I mean, your cousin is in college on the West Coast, right?
Yeah, I got a couple cousins that are in college.
Are they home now?
Yep, they're home.
Gotta love living with mom and dad.
Yes.
I remember I was reading this thing. This girl basically, she moved home. She's like 19 or 20. She sent her parents a text, living in the same house. Do not expect me to be at the dinner table every night. I have my own life. She sent like this litany of complaints to her parents.
Oh, I would smoke her out of her room.
I would
throw in some tear gas.
Yeah, I'd pack up her bags, put them out in the driveway, and say, I'm sorry it was such a burden to you. I mean, can you imagine talking to your parents like that?
Oh,
I can only imagine how that would have gone over if that were me. Like, your parents, well, she was probably raised with the, you know, dear and, oh, why are you, you know, I was not raised particularly with my feelings taken too much into consideration. You know, you just do what you're supposed to do.
What feelings?
Yeah, like, that's it. Just go. What, you know. So, I got to imagine it's kind of trying for parents. It's trying for, you know, you're 19, you're 20, you've been used to hanging out with your friends and getting loaded on the weekends, and now you're at home, and you're like, oh my God. So, I don't know. Yeah. That's tough.
But also, too, it's like, you know, most people are, you know, taking out loans, mortgaging their house to pay for university for the kids, and now their kids are not getting that vital community social aspect. Like,
right.
And there are certain colleges that are refusing to lower tuition or refund people money. I mean, I think they are refunding like room and board, but some are not. Like, what is the straw that's going to break the camel's back? Like,
go ahead.
No, I mean, I think people might, you know, incoming students might opt to go to a local college or a community college and maybe save some money. I mean, if they're going to learn online, I mean, like, is there that much of a difference?
You know, colleges have gotten away. I don't know how these schools still get away with charging so much tuition. Like, I just don't get it.
Well, it's simple economics. I mean, if you have a system where the government will provide loans to you no matter what the cost for you to go to college, colleges just continue to raise the price tag. I honestly think that Harvard might be like $70,000-$75,000 a year. I think a place like Harvard could double or triple that amount and they would still be overrun with students.
I know. I still don't know how they get away with all this. Like, charging so much, putting people in so much debt. And also, you know, for the last 2 or 3 years, people have been seriously questioning, what does a 4-year degree get me? Like, you got
to... I tell you, it's a real... Like, look, if you're going to go into finance, consulting, hedge fund, you could become a medical doctor, a lawyer, it does matter. It does matter if you go to Penn State, University of Pennsylvania, Harvard, Yale, Cornell, that does matter. There's no doubt about it. But there's a whole host of other things where it really doesn't matter.
I mean, what you're talking about, the name is what matters. I'm not sure what you learn is what matters, quite frankly.
Correct, It's the name and it's the network.
Markets. And honestly, I think it's going to take a long time, but you know, I heard, I think he was a lawyer, and he was talking about hiring people from quote-unquote lesser schools. Because the idea was like, these days, the law profession, if you didn't go to Harvard, Stanford, or Yale, you forget it. I mean, you weren't going to find a job. But he said, you know, I'm understanding that kids just can't afford that, and they're every bit as smart as someone who could get into those schools. They just can't afford it. So he was more open to being like, I want somebody who's smart, who works hard. But forget smart. Like, I want someone who works hard. But, you know, the idea of, like, you know, coding being the new kind of blue-collar profession, like, I don't need to go to a four-year college. I can go to a two-year program, learn how to code, and
oh, absolutely.
You know, a local place. And I think if someone's a freshman, they would probably radically rethink going back to the same school next year. If you're going into your senior year and you've invested that much time and money, you probably want that degree from that place.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I
even a junior.
Yeah, again, that's tough. Like, senior, if you're going into your senior year, definitely. If you're going into your junior year, that's a hard position, because it's like, we've already invested in 2 years. Do we go for two more? Do we cut our losses?
And the whole the craziness is that it's one of the only debts that can't be discharged by bankruptcy. Like, if you go bankrupt, you can, you know, all your creditors can go F themselves, but not your student loans.
I still, you know, it seems like industry, the government, and the colleges are all in this racket together.
Absolutely. It's also, you know, the colleges are sucking in this money with administration, building buildings, stadiums.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think, you know, University of Phoenix was kind of the first one that went all in with the online. And there was a stigma probably about 10 years ago. I think that has been radically erased, you know, because it's like, look, I can't afford, even if I can get loans, I don't want to have $200,000 in debt. And if I was an employer, I'd say, yeah, that's a smart move. You're smart to do that. I mean, I graduated with a history degree. Like, what am I going to do with that now? I mean, if I graduated in 2018 with a history degree, what's that going to get me?
So, I graduated with a degree in international economics and finance. I had $25,000 in student loans, and that was with, I had academic scholarships, I had athletic scholarships, and grants, and I still came out of there with 25 grand.
Yeah.
And student loans. I mean, you could easily have six figures in student loans coming out of school today.
I mean, the other simple economic thing would be, why don't you lower your cost? Like, why don't you lower your tuition rate and look at all the bloated, you know, bureaucracy you have at fill in the blank. I mean, UMass Boston at one point, they had like six vice presidents all earning over six figures a year.
It's a racket.
I mean, a racket. Doing what, might I ask? Like, what? I felt like saying, you know what? I'll do that job for half that salary. How about that? No problem.
They're all in like a circle massaging each other. That's what they do.
All right, folks. Well, those are just some thoughts on the end of the office space. Maybe the end of... No, not the end. It won't be the end, but it's definitely... you know, times
like
this.
It's the evolution.
Yeah, of what is education going to look like? What is the physical office space going to look like? What's people's work day going to look like? You know, it's not going to be 9 to 5 if you're working from home. It'd probably be more like 10 to 4, maybe. I mean, if you cut out your commute, all that time, and all the BSing with the colleagues, of course, for you, the massaging... That'll be a real blow.
That's
going to
take a heavy hit. That's going to take a heavy hit psychologically on
you. You'll have your employees in for twice a week for an hour just so you can get... See, but you're going to have to focus your time.
And they'll dread it.
Yeah,
they'll
dread it. And you're just waiting at the door to that conference room, licking your chops. Just can't wait to get in there. How you been doing, Steve? Steve's trying to get away from you around the table.
Yeah, I've got hand warmers on, so my touch is nice and warm.
Actually, I like the image of you snapping the rubber gloves, saying, hey, it's all about It's all about health and safety here, everyone. And they're all like, oh,
God. Oh, just disgusting.
Let me slap on some hand sanitizer here and we'll get to work.
It gets all over Steve's jacket. It's like dripping off.
And they're like, what are we supposed to be talking? What's the agenda? Oh, we'll get to that. Oh, we'll get to that.
Just you wait.
All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening and stay tuned for more episodes from the Outpost here.
Yeah, everyone, thanks for listening and stay safe and healthy. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Working Experience. We'd like to thank our sponsors, One Circle Media and the Still Believe app, the only app that delivers video proof of the Tooth Fairy and Santa by simply taking a picture. Download the app at stillbelieve.co today and amaze your kids. And if you work for a studio, network, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain your audience, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I would love to hear from you. And that's it. The end. The sweet end. Until our next audio encounter.